For the past 3 summers, I've been heading out the U.S. Southwest to the wilderness on a pilgrimage quest. And while I've told you stories about that, I've never been able to quite explain or speak adequately about what these trips have been about, why I feel this strong desire to go. A neighbor of mine quipped to me this past summer before I headed out. He said, "Why do you keep going out to the wilderness? Are you looking for a burning bush like Moses?" I said, "Well, yeah, actually, that's kind of exactly what I'm looking for. They've been for me quests to find something, a certain confirmation or connection or like a confirmation of call, something I find it very difficult to put words around and talk about. And for each of the 3 trips that I've taken, there was a specific intention, a specific thing I asked from God for each of those trips. The first is that I would see a massive thunderstorm, and that happened. And it's not that I necessarily think God created a thunderstorm for me, but maybe it woke me up, had my eyes open. The second trip, I asked for a beautiful night sky, glimmering night sky, and I experienced that as well. And on this past one, I was just like, I need to find a relic, a potsherd, an Anasazi potsherd in the ground. I can't tell you the excitement when I found at Chaco Canyon those pieces sitting in the ground there. It was this confirmation, this quest. And it's been bizarre for me because I don't know how to talk or put words around the idea of quests and pilgrimages and journeys. But I want to spend the next 2 weeks trying to do exactly that, trying to talk about something that I find hard to talk about, the idea of quest and calling in our lives. And one of the most wonderful surprises to me about digging into Genesis is that Genesis has, in many ways, the stories there are actually giving me a bit of a language, helping me make sense of my own experiences. And these narratives here, they're helping me understand about things about my life that I've had trouble putting into words. And so Genesis 12, we're back into Genesis, it marks a turning point in the story of Genesis. We move out of sort of these archetypal stories, grand stories about the human condition, and we're confronted with these sweeping historical dramas of people's actual lives. And the characters we find there, they're prompted by God towards quest. They're given a calling. They're launched into adventure, a journey into the unknown. And as I've dug into these stories, I'm realizing, again, they're giving me a language and a narrative around my own sense of life. And so what I hope is that it will do perhaps the same for you, because these stories are extraordinary. They're the dramas of a life lived out in the sweaty, gritty reality of the world. So I want to take us into the story of Abraham and Sarah. And I should note up front, these stories are just so wonderfully layered. I want to pursue a certain angle with the story of Abraham, but there's so much more going on. For instance, one of the angles here is that Genesis 12, the whole chapter mirrors the Exodus story, like precisely. And so you have in Abraham's story, he ends up in Egypt because of a famine, and later Joseph and the Israelites would end up there for the same reason. And then in Abraham's story, Sarah becomes the Pharaoh's property, a slave, you could say, in the same way the Israelites will end up being Pharaoh's property and slaves years later. In Abraham's story, Pharaoh's household ends up plagued by God. In the Exodus story, the plagues come. Abraham leaves and wanders the desert, just like the Israelites would do. So there's immediately like these fascinating parallels here, this pattern of quest and calling and wandering in the wilderness. It's like a foreshadowing of a pattern, a quest pattern. And I want to sort of develop that because I think it's a pattern that we also see developed in Jesus' life and ministry. And I think it's the same quest pattern that applies to us today. And so I think to start, you could frame it this way. The with God life is a call to quest, an adventure into the unknown. And so the story starts with some stage setting. If you remember back into the fall, the concept of Chekhov's gun. If you put a gun on stage, you better fire it. And so the stage setting here, we have a Chekhov gun set up. That's how it starts. This is the account of Terah's family line. And there's a bunch of names, so it's kind of boring. But Terah became the father of Abraham. Abram. Just a quick note. Abram and Sarai become Abraham and Sarah. I'll try not to confuse those. But Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran became the father of Lot. While his father Terah was still alive, Haran died in Ur of the Chaldeans in the land of his birth. Abram and Nahor both married. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. She was the daughter of Haran, the father of both Milcah and Iscah. And you're like, oh, okay, whatever. Now, here's the gun on stage. Sarai was childless because she was not able to conceive. Stage setting. The gun is loaded, so it better go off pretty soon. Abraham and Sarah, they can't have children. They can't conceive. The stage is set. Now comes the call to quest. The Lord said to Abraham, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I'll make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. There's the call to quest, but immediately there's a problem. Abraham and Sarah, they can't have children, and yet God's going to make Abraham the father of nations. Well, that's a bit of a problem. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And I think to understand the quest motif in literature is to realize the call to quest is always one of impossible odds. And it all starts in that first line, though. If you're going to do life with God as quest, you're going to be asked to go where you've never been. And that's so key. The quest begins with the call to leave home. Leave what's familiar and comfortable and go. Head to a place that you've never been before, a place you don't understand. You have to go into the unknown, and that's where every adventure starts, by moving into the unknown. We see this paralleled in Jesus' ministry when he calls his disciples. They call fishermen out of their home, their family trade. Come, leave what's familiar, leave what's home, come and follow me. Same with Matthew. Leave your livelihood of tax collecting, what's familiar, what's known. Come, follow me. And so we see this paralleled in Jesus' life. And I think it's the same call to us. The adventure with God is to leave the unknown. I'm obsessed with nonfiction stories of adventure. I eat them up. I love them. I read one over in the first new year, the first week of January, this book, Jungle by Yossi Ginsberg. It's just phenomenal. This guy's backpacking through South America, and some stranger says, hey, I'm going to take an expedition through the Amazon. You want to join me? Sure. So him and three other guys, they take off. The guide turns out to be a little bit woohoo. So two of them turn around and go home. He's left on a raft with his friend. They crash. He's stranded in the jungle for weeks, almost starves to death. The jaguars are tracking him. It's just like, wow, amazing. It's so fascinating what humans are capable of when they go into the unknown and journey, and it's a great survival story, but it follows the same pattern. He leaves what's comfortable and familiar, heads into the unknown, and it is met with disaster and challenges, hardships. And I think in terms of understanding like the historical dramas we find in Genesis, it's best to understand these are adventure stories, these are quests. And it always begins with a call. Get going. Leave what's familiar. Head into the unknown. And I think it's timelessly true for us as well, and I think for good reason, because the thing is this, wherever you are right now, wherever is home for you, comfortable for you, you already know what you know there. And it's like if you're going to learn new things, if you're going to grow as a human being, well, then it's time to leave home, metaphorically speaking. You're going to have to embrace and enter the unknown. And so for Abraham, he's called to be the father of nations. The first step is go. And what's riding on this is so interesting to me, because God's promise is this: if you go, people will be blessed through you. So go and enter the unknown. And I love this because the quest motif here comes with a responsibility to others. I think that's true of all of us. I have a responsibility to you. And I have a responsibility to my family and to my neighborhood and to my community, to the world even at large. I have a responsibility to be my best self. It's a responsibility I have. And it's the same with all of us here. You have a responsibility To become the person God wants you to be, is calling you to be. And so and when you think about it like that, it's a bit of a shift. You have a responsibility to grow up and mature and become better. And understanding life with God as quest, it isn't just about a self-help plan. Hey, here's my self-actualization process. I'm going to lose weight and feel good about it. No, it's not that. It's to become your best self in order that you will bless others. And it's a responsibility. And it's interesting. I've done a lot of weddings. Every time I speak at a wedding, one of the last things I say to the couple in my meditation is this. The reason you are getting married and forming a relationship and hopefully making it a good relationship is not just so that you can go buy a house and have a happy life. You get married and form a good relationship so you can bless others. I mean, how many of us have sat around a table? I think I was this last night with Kristen, actually. I think she was a bit embarrassed by me. But have you ever sat with a married couple and had them like bickering and arguing in front of you, and you're like, this is awful. Like, do that at home. This is awful. You're not blessing anyone right now. This is, keep that at home. And you know, it's fascinating to me that we so often, I think, lose this idea that our call in life is to bless others. And to do that, we're going to have to venture into the unknown. I came across this quote by Dostoevsky, and normally the quotes I put on the screen, I've read something of them. I'm going to be honest. I find Dostoevsky, I can't get through his works. But I found a quote by him that I thought was fascinating. And it's harsh and bizarre. He says this, there's only one way to salvation, and that's to make yourself responsible for all men's sins. As soon as you make yourself responsible in all sincerity for everything and for everyone, you will see at once that this is really so, and that you are in fact to blame for everyone and for all things. I don't believe that, actually. Actually, don't buy that at all. I've got enough sins and problems of my own to take responsibility for. I don't need to take responsibility for yours. And yet, this quote got me thinking because it's so drastic and so over the top, right, that it got me thinking. There is a certain interconnectedness between all of us. And I find it telling because in some ways I think it's hinting at what God's saying to Abraham. Your quest, Abraham, is to live into your destiny, to become the person I want you to be. And so it's not just about you, Abraham. I'm going to say this for all of us. Everyone has a stake in you becoming the person you're meant to be. All of us do. And so when we embark on the quest with God life, become who we're created to be, everyone will be blessed by that. And I think the quest invitation comes in the exact same way. This isn't about me. It's about all of us. I have to do my best to become who I need to be for all of us. And you might ask, well, okay, if it's about growing, maturing, developing, how do I know if I'm maturing? Good question. You could talk about the fruit of the Spirit. You could talk about the love chapter in 1 Corinthians 13. Well, let me apply two questions. I was floored by these. My brother had posted these up this week on Facebook, and they just rocked me because I was very uncomfortable with my own answers to them. And said this, if you want to know if you're growing spiritually, becoming a more mature person, becoming the kind of person you should be, Dallas Willard suggests you ask yourself these two questions. First, am I growing more or less easily irritated these days? And second, am I growing more or less easily discouraged these days? And the second one, I was, but the first one, I'm like, oh God, this is not good. I don't know if I've been ever more easily irritated in my life. And I don't know if it's age or what's going on. I dislike a lot of people and things and just easily irritated. Last night, Kristen and I were out with some neighborhood friends and we were playing a game and then, you know, deeper talk came up and politics and all that stuff. And was there listening, and I found myself, I was annoyed because I thought some of the comments were sort of naive and arrogant, and before I knew it, I was chatting.
And you ever, I don't know if you've been with your partner or whatnot, or you ever get the, when you're out with people, you get the tap on the leg, like, shut up, shut up. It kept getting harder from Kristen, like, shut up. I'm like, I got a point to make. Man. It was weird. We got home last night, and I'm like, what was that about? What are you, Tommy? And she's like, I hate this kind of stuff. She said, hey, do you remember that sermon you gave last week? I said, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. She said, can I recommend you listen to it? So, do that later on tonight, maybe. I just, you know, when I look at the love chapter, the fruit of the Spirit, they all point to that. Like, if you're easily irritated, I think that's a very good sign that you're not growing. In fact, you might be regressing, and I see that in my life, and I'm like, what? I don't want to be that. And I hear this story, I'm like, I have a responsibility to grow and mature. We need that from each other. So the call, the quest is pick up your responsibility and go. Leave where you're comfortable. Leave where you're familiar. If your familiar is being irritated, you must leave that. Leave it. Leave it behind. And you know, I might say with this call thought, well, how do I know what God is calling me to? I haven't seen any burning bushes or heard any voices. Fair enough, neither have I. Let me say this. The interesting thing to me about Abraham's call is it's so vague at the beginning, right? It's like, don't just go. The call to quest, I think, often comes to us wrapped in an ambiguous package. But I think the best place to start is here. What is interesting you? Or perhaps a bit, what is gripping you? Whatever that is, perhaps accept that as your divine call, because there's something intriguing to me about interest in the things that grip us, is they come to us, right? We don't sort of develop them, they sort of come to us. It's almost like dreaming. You don't pick what you dream about, you just sort of receive a dream, and you're like, that's weird, I don't know where that came from. And it's the sort of the same thing with interests and a calling. And it's, you know, I had a friend talking to me, but like, we're like, why in the world, it seems so boring that you would be interested in going out into the desert and looking for little pieces of pottery? Like, that just seems so bizarre. And part of me, my response is, I didn't choose that. That sort of chose me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I heard about it and read about it, and suddenly I was gripped. It's like, that sort of captured me. And you know, I think there's a calling in all of us towards what we're compelled by, what we're interested in, and I think the idea is, well, move toward that. Move away from your country and your father's house and the comforts of home and what is familiar, what is known to you, and go there towards something that's beyond you, and listen to that. Because I would say this, we ignore those promptings, those things that grip us, I think, at our peril. And not everything that interests us is a calling, but if you do listen to that thing that beckons you forward, captures your interest, grabs you, a lot of times what happens is we suppress those and we realize years later that we've squandered an opportunity possibly to bless others. Turning 37 this year was a weird experience for me because it marked the 10th year anniversary of my year intentions. So when I turned 27, for some unknown reason, because so many rock stars kill themselves at 27. I know it's a weird thing, but because they do, I thought, this is going to be my year of creativity. And I'm like, I felt really called to do something creative. And I love music. I just love music. I love what the band does up here. And I was like, I feel drawn into that. And I said to Krista, I'm going to learn to play a musical instrument. And so I went out and I rented a violin. And I got it home and I took it out and squeaked it and it just didn't sound good, but I had it there and I said to Kristen, tomorrow I'm calling and I'm gonna get myself some lessons. And that day passed and another day passed and then I had rented it for a month and I got calls because I hadn't returned it on time and I hadn't touched it. And this year, turning 37, I looked back and thought, wow, it's been 10 years since I failed miserably at my creative project. And I think there's always something bizarre about looking back at life and thinking to yourself, had I been disciplined
I might have, 10 years in, been able to be playing with the band today, blessing you with my music, right? Playing some Ashley McIsaac or I don't know. And sure, not everything that interests you is a call, a life vocation, and yet perhaps it is. And perhaps whatever that thing that's calling you could make you a blessing to other people, and wouldn't that be great? And so I think we ignore these at our peril, and I'm convinced that there's always a call for us, asking us to go and move into the unfamiliar, move beyond what we know, leave behind home and go. Abraham's story. Abraham went. Good for him. As the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old. See, now that's a problem. Like, he's been playing video games too long. So, 75 years old, he sets out for Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. They arrived there. Then Abram set out and continued toward the Negev. Now, there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. And so God calls Abraham and says, just go, like leave, get going, I'll show you. And so Abraham heeds the call, okay, I'm on it. He goes, he leaves, and he ends up in a land plagued by drought and famine. And his quest ends up being full of hardships. He's old, Sarah's old, they can't conceive, he follows God's voice, but he ends up starving, and then he's forced into the tyranny of Egypt, finds himself in a system that is going to break him, and it does. And he makes a mistake. And in a few weeks from now, I want to do a series on fear, because as you start to look at these personal stories, what you realize in the Genesis stories is every time somebody makes a mistake, so often fear is behind that. He makes a mistake, this is what happens. As he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife, Sarai, I know what a beautiful woman you are. And when the Egyptians see you, they're going to say, this is his wife. Then they're going to kill me, but they're going to let you live. So if you don't mind, say you're my sister so that I'll be treated well for your sake and my life will be spared because of you. Now it's interesting, we're not told what Sarah had to say about this, just sort of skips over that part, but when Abram came to Egypt, the Egyptians saw that Sarai was a very beautiful woman, and when Pharaoh's officials saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh. She was taken into his palace, and he treated Abram well for her sake, and Abram acquired sheep and cattle, male and female donkeys, male and female servants and camels, and the Lord inflicted serious diseases on Pharaoh and his household because of Abram's wife Sarai. So Pharaoh summoned Abram. What have you done to me? Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister's that I took her to be my wife? Now then, here she is. Here's your wife. Take her. Go. Pharaoh gave orders about Abram to his men, and they sent him on his way with his wife and everything he had. I mean, what a mess up here. This is just one of the mistakes we'll see him make, but it really humanizes Abraham for me because he's a failure. And it's interesting to me because there's a fascinating calculation from Abraham here, because he realizes whether he has integrity or not with the tyrannous system of Egypt, it doesn't really matter. The outcome is going to be the same. He rationalizes. So he thinks to himself, either way, they're taking my wife. That's happening for sure. I'm powerless against this system, so what do? Do I tell the truth, have integrity, be honest and courageous, and probably die watching my wife be taken from me? Or do I compromise and lie and at least live to see her taken away from me? I can sympathize with his failure here, because in his mind, it's like it all washes out the same. She's gone, whether I lie or tell the truth, so I might as well save my own skin. But it's fascinating to me what happens. Notice what happens. He compromises, and remember, Abraham's call is to be a blessing. That's his call. And what happens is by compromising, he actually brings curses on the Egyptians, no less Sarah, I would assume. Compromises on his integrity. Not only that, he profits from it. But it wasn't a quest that was called, that he was called to profit. He was called to bless people, and he leaves Egypt failing miserably. He's brought curses by compromising himself and through deceit. I think there's a powerful lesson here.
Sometimes we're powerless in this life, right? Tyranny of systems, our biology. Sometimes I think we have no power at all in situations. And I think the question will always come, so what do I do with that? Do I stay true to who I am? Should I be honest? Or do I compromise? And if I compromise my integrity, maybe even I might get lucky and actually profit from it. And that's what he does. He compromises, walks away better off than he was before. That's life. That happens all the time. But someone always walks away burned from a situation like that. To compromise our integrity is to run the risk that while we might benefit from it, our actions always hurt someone. That's precisely what happens here. So he walks away from Egypt. He's failed. He looks like a loser. In his initial quest, because he has a series of them, comes to a conclusion this way. So Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. Abram had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. From the Negev, he went up to the place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier and where he had first built an altar. There, Abram called on the name of the Lord. And so he goes, he leaves, he faces hardships, ultimately he fails, he ends up looking like a fool, an embarrassment, and he ends up back in a similar spot, not sure what to do, so he calls on God. And I love it, because he comes back and says essentially to God, listen, that didn't really go as I thought it might, and I look like a fool right now, so what do I do? And you know, I think there's an interesting pattern of quest here that works this way. You're called, you go forward, you face hardships, you fail, you look foolish, you're back on your knees looking for direction, and then the thing repeats itself all over again. Quests and adventures are always like that. You go, you stumble around like an idiot, and when you try to do something new and familiar, you always have some mistake, a failure. You end up looking like a fool. I've never told you guys this, but I wrote a movie script with my brothers. And it started out as a passion project because one of my brothers lives in BC and we enjoy laughing together. So I came up with the idea. I said, why don't we just for fun write a script, a movie script? Okay. So one of us would write a scene and then send it to the others and they would write scenes on top of that, and we worked on it for about a year and we thought it was the most funny thing ever. It was hilarious. We laughed about it. It was wonderful. It was great. And then I said to them, we should do something with this. Like, this is good. And they said, no, we should. That's our little thing. We should not do anything with this. I said, no, I'm serious. I think, why don't we all take a trip to LA? Let's try to sell this thing. Let's try to sell it. We'll shop it around. We could be the next thing in Hollywood. I'm like, don't think so, Brad. So they tempered that thought a little bit, but then I happened to be at a stage production, a theater show here in town, and I was captivated by this one actor. I thought he was brilliant in the show that I had seen. I'm like, that guy's a brilliant actor. And then I had learned that he was a director as well. And I was so captivated by him, I thought, that's the guy. He is going to direct and star in my script. And so I tracked him down, and I said, can I come and pitch you on something? He said, sure. So I came over, and I handed him my script, and I said, I think there's something here, and I think you're the person to do it. It's written as a film, but I think we can adapt it to stage. It's going to be great. Would you please read through it? And let's talk about how we can make this thing happen. Like, I'll rent the theater, we'll do this. He's like, all right, I'll read it. So he got back to me in a week, he called me back in, I sat down with him, he said, okay, so how do you want this? I said, well, tell me what we need to do, like, give it to me straight. And he took my script, and he pushed it towards me, and said, this is awful. He said, it's not that there's nothing there. It's just that you wrote it with four people. It's so blatantly obvious that four people wrote this. You have the same character that sounds completely different in one scene and the other. He said, your formatting is awful. This thing is a mess to look at. So he said, I'm going to be straight up with you. you would have to spend hours moving this into something remotely workable. And I said, so you're saying there's a chance here, huh? No. I said, okay. I said, would you work with me on that? He said, no. That's on you. And I got in my car, and I felt like the biggest fool. Like, what was I thinking that I could just somehow type out a movie script and think, yeah, people are going to love it. Like, my first time trying something like that, go and do it, and it would be great and awesome. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate the fact that he just hit me. Just tell it to me straight. And he did, and it hurt, and I felt like a fool, an absolute fool. And you know, I think at the end of this quest story, this is exactly what Abraham looks like. A fool. Which I suspect, to me, is precisely the point of the story. Because you know why I think we so often don't pay attention to what is calling us or gripping us, that voice that's calling us away from home and into the unfamiliar? You know why I think we so often ignore it, pretend we can't hear it, pretend it isn't there? Because we're scared of looking like fools. But you have to be a fool before you can be a master. And if you're not willing to be a fool, then you can't be a master. I've learned this lesson so many times. You don't become a master without looking silly. And this is, I think, the key to Abraham's life of quest and what it means to do life with God as quest. It's going to be error-ridden process marked by hardships and failure and looking foolish. And some of that will be social in nature. Some of that's just going to be simply the consequences of our own inadequacy and our lack of knowledge and just plain out stupid decisions we make. But it's a beautiful thing. Because God knows Abraham is a fool. And he knows we're fools too, and that we're in a room full of fools. And yet, in spite of that, God's call is, come on the adventure. Because you can only learn to be a blessing to other people by going, venturing into the unknown. And that's going to mean you're going to have to play the fool. And you're going to have to learn and grow and mature. And so you can assume, I think, that whatever it is you are being called to, and I really believe this. You are being called to something that will make you a blessing. You are. That's for sure. But whatever it is you're being called to, once you enter the unknown, once you've left home, whatever it is, you're going to do it badly. And I find that really useful to know, because then you don't have to beat yourself up about it. And beyond that, it's better to do the thing you're called to do badly than to not do it at all. But it all boils down to me to one question. Are you willing to look like a fool? And that's what I love about these stories of Genesis. It's the stories of fools venturing into the unknown and saying, I will heed the call, I will go, I will try to be a blessing to others, and failing miserably and starting over and ending up calling on God again. Now what? I look like a fool. And to me, the good news of the whole life with God as quest thing is this. The initial point of departure for all of us is radical insufficiency and incompetency. And I find this to be so inspiring because it means we can start from anywhere. And so the story ends with Abraham confused. Doesn't know what to do. Should he just go home, throw in the towel? Instead, he builds an altar. He determines, I'm going to make the right kind of sacrifices in life, and I'm going to ask for divine guidance. And so he comes and his posture seems to say, okay, things aren't going well, but instead of packing it in, I'm going to ask what's next. I think that's a great question for all of us here to be asking. What's next? What's next? Where are you calling me, God, out of the familiar, the comfortable, the unknown? Answer those questions, and I think you're well on your way to being a blessing to others. And so this week as we go, may you grapple with that in your own way. What's next? What's home? Where do I need to leave? Where am I being called into an adventure and a quest?